Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the SOMTV podcast. My name is Jason Wise. I have some very, very special news for all of you today. Our original film, The Whole Animal, streaming right now on SOMTV, has just been nominated for a James Beard Award. This is what I would say the highest award you can get in the culinary world. Last year, we were nominated for Sparklers, and this was a major surprise, and we are so excited. We have Claire Copey coming to join me. And she and I are going to talk about the James Beard Foundation and the award and what that actually means, a little bit about The Whole Animal, and then I'm going to interview the composer, Alex Monsor, who did the score for The Whole Animal with all real instruments with an orchestra, and we did it the old-fashioned way, and it's something I'm just so proud of. We will talk to Alex following Claire. Before we do that, I want to tell all of you, in celebration for this nomination, I'm going to give our listeners 50% off SOMTV. If you go to SOMTV.com and you enter the code 50OFF, 50OFF, 50OFF at SOMTV.com, you can get SOMTV for an entire year for only $25. This is the best deal. There are hundreds and hundreds of hours of educational and entertainment content on SOMTV in the culinary world, and you can find it nowhere else. So go to SOMTV.com and use 50OFF, 50OFF. Claire, it's great to have you on the pod. It was hell of a news to wake up to this morning.
Right? How exciting. Congratulations.
You know, this was a film that, like many of our films, took a long time, but this one in particular was, geez, I think it took us 7 or 8 years to make this film. We filmed in 6 countries. People throw around the term passion project a lot. The Whole Animal was a passion project for sure, for myself.
And you can see that.
Well, thank you.
You can see that in the film. You can see the love. And obviously, I'm a little biased since I'm part of this company. But at the same time, like watching that film when it was first released, it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And I think it gets people thinking about more sustainable and respectful meat eating and about where that food comes from and how we're treating those animals and how they're raised and then how it's broken down and utilized properly to respect that animal. So I thought it was a wonderful film. And I'm very, very excited that it's been recognized in this way.
Yeah, it's really, really cool. So I think one thing about, just to talk about the film for 1 second, people are afraid to talk about meat. And, you know, I have nothing against people who choose not to eat meat, but for those who do eat it, I think it really, out of almost all the food that is in the food system that we eat, it's the easiest to modify, you know, what you're having to eat better stuff. I mean, meat is one of these things that there is just a sharp dividing line between processed junk. And I don't mean junk as far as like unhealthy or anything like that. I mean junk that is just from top to bottom, not good for the land, not good for people, not good for the animals, not good for anything. Yeah. No. And then you cross this little line and it's a totally different world and the taste reflects that. So even if you don't particularly care about any one of those things, it always ends up on the plate as far as it will be a better product. So that was sort of the thinking behind The Whole Animal, is that let's actually talk about meat. Let's not be afraid to talk about meat, and let's put it in a context that hopefully multi-generations can understand where we're coming from. And so when the nominations came out this morning, we're nominated against a show on Netflix and nominated against a show on Vice Network. This is, you know, we're playing with the big boys here. And I think it's just a real tremendous testament to the cast, which have some of the greatest chefs around the world, and the crew that made this thing. So not to get too weepy here, but I'm really, really excited. It's really great. And I hope everybody listening has either seen this film or takes advantage of the offer at the top of this podcast and subscribes and watches it, because I can tell you, for $25, you can't get a better deal in streaming right now. It's just,
that's true.
It's
That's the
best.
Cost of a movie ticket too, basically now, isn't it? To see a film in theaters.
It kind of is, yeah. So Claire, let's talk about the James Beard Foundation. Before I get to my interview with Alex Monsor, who composed the music, what does the James Beard name mean in the culinary world? Who is this person?
It's pretty huge. This is a chef that is instrumental in putting American cuisine on a global stage and having it be respected. James Beard is an incredibly famous chef. He had the very first cooking TV show in, I think, like 1946, when this was not a thing that you see at all. This was a time that when French cooking was the cuisine that was taken seriously. That's what fine cuisine was. And James Beard really laid the foundation for American cuisine, like I mentioned, being more respected on a global scale. And it ties in so beautifully with what you were just talking about with Whole Animal, where when you respect your ingredients, produce and animal alike, and you use fresh, wholesome ingredients, it shifts the cuisine. It makes it better. And that's what James Beard's focus was on with American cuisine, using fresh local ingredients to showcase the different cultures and the variety as well in American cuisine. And so the James Beard Foundation honors James Beard and his vision, and of course, this foundation that he's laid for American cuisine. They have these awards that, as you mentioned, are pretty much the highest accolade you can get in the food and beverage industry. And I'm going to share what they describe themselves as from their website here. The James Beard Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to celebrate, support, and elevate the people behind America's food culture and champion a standard of good food anchored in talent, equity, and sustainability. And so when you do get an award nomination, it's a pretty big thing, right? With all of that behind it.
It feels good. I mean, it's one of the things where we, you know, working within SOMTV and working within what people consider a niche, I don't think food and wine is a niche. I like to think of food and wine as a much broader thing that a lot of niches fit into. I see sports in it. I see religion. I see agriculture. I see all of these things fitting within that versus them fitting within that. And so for a film like this to be nominated, and for a lot of the other nominees, it changes the game of how we look at entertainment and education within the food and wine world. So we should say that these awards often go to, I mean, if you go into a restaurant and it has Best Restaurant of the Year James Beard Award, that is a huge deal. They give the awards to restaurants, to wine programs, to all sorts of different categories within the actual restaurant trade, but now they've opened it up to media. And so the media awards, I believe they go back maybe a decade or so, and it is, it's very smart for them to have done this. I really think that, but they're the top, you know, top of the top. There's some great photos of James Beard with Julia Childs, you know, like drinking Chablis, like in a bathtub together and stuff. If you've ever been to the CIA, the Culinary Institute of America, and it seemed like this guy lived a very happy life, you know, in many ways. Him and Julia Child are probably the two people American-wise that, like you said, they took this French cuisine out of, it's not that they didn't use a lot of butter, but they took it out of the French bistro and put an American spin on it and really made American food a thing. Now, American food for me is a very hard thing to define. I kind of always just go to New Orleans as like the only true American cuisine that I know of. You know, the idea that America can stand on any kind of a ledge with the rest of these places really is owed to James Beard. So, Claire, off the top of your head, do you have any other films that you would recommend to people from a food standpoint that they should watch along the lines of The Whole Animal?
I think that another excellent film that you can find on SOMTV is The Delicacy that you guys shot on film, by the way, which I think is very ambitious and incredible because you don't see anything like that, especially not underwater. But this film focuses on the uni, the sea urchin divers in Santa Barbara, and that tradition and culture that brings us these delicious treats from the sea. And it's an incredibly dangerous profession, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I wasn't expecting you to name that film. It's good to another one that I directed be named. I think, look, the idea of anything that really gets into, you hear this buzzword, people want to know where their food comes from all the time. You hear that buzz, you know, but walking that walk is very hard. And so, you know, I'm just pleased to be able to bring these projects to people who subscribe to SOMTV because, frankly, they take years and years and years to make. So this means a lot. Without further ado, I am going to speak with the composer of the film, The Whole Animal, right now, Alex Mansour, to talk about how music is maybe the most important thing in a movie, whether you know it or not. Something that I think just absolutely is one of the most important things when you make a film is who does the music, how good are they, and how do they approach it? It's something that I don't think is talked about enough when it comes to a creative project. And I know you're thinking, this is a wine podcast. I don't think anything pairs with wine better than music. And hopefully at the end of this, you will agree with me. Well, that particular film, I know I directed it, so I will try very hard to be a host and also the director of a film, which is a strange thing to do on a podcast. But when you go to make a film, you hope you have all of the elements in correct. You know, you hope you've casted it right, you hope the story's right. But for me personally, having the right score and having the right music is just as important as any one of those other elements. I was very, very, very lucky to be put in contact with a young man named Alex Mansour. And he is, I don't know, at some point I hope to work for him, kind of. He's on a trajectory that's very, very, very successful, and he's going to be very, very, I get to work with him a lot more. Alex is on the podcast, and how are you, Alex? Good?
I'm great, Jason. Thank you for that intro. I don't know what to say now, but it was an honor to work with you, and this project was really special. Thank you for having me.
Let me just give you really fast a background on the whole animal. So when I made Psalm 1, and it was successful, we started thinking, I really want to do another film about a profession. I want that profession to be something that has been overlooked. And I didn't want it to be like sommeliers, kind of, you may not have heard of them. I thought long and hard, and what kept coming up was the concept of the butcher. This word that is often maligned, often used in out of context for what the job is. It's kind of, and that was many, many, many years ago. So we started thinking, how do we shoot this film? We started making a film about butchers. And if you've seen the movie, you can understand the DNA of that is in this. And what we ended up with was a beautiful film that's a very travelogue movie that goes around the world. It has some incredible chefs, some real badass people who cook. But the music was a son of a bitch. I didn't know how to put music in this movie, and I didn't know what to use. Because on one hand, and I'm going to just flat out say it because it's a strange thing to talk about. On one hand, you have, you know, animals are alive and then they're not, and then you eat them. And that's something that people who eat meat, I believe, need to understand and need to care about. But you don't want to celebrate that. And so the music could go wrong that direction. But also, this is a film that takes place in many different countries, has a lot of different themes. And so I'm gonna ask you a question here, Alex. When I came to you with this film and we made this, What was your initial impression of what the whole animal was, and how the hell did you approach, I'm going to do music for a film like this? So I'm curious how you took this on.
Yeah, I mean, I think my initial thought is a little bit what you're getting at there of fear, or how is this slightly challenging topic handled? But after watching the movie, I remember being immediately struck, and it became kind of obvious the angle the music should take, which was, it's twofold. I think the first part of it is respect celebration of the craft and tradition that is preparing these dishes, the art of butchery, the idea of passing down over generations a skill that you're taught, and this kind of apprentice and a teacher and student relationship. But the second part of it, and the part that I think I really wanted to engage in is gratitude, love, and respect for the animals themselves. And I think the farmer sequence in the film really immediately kind of pointed me there of the music should be a love letter to these animals and life that help provide for us. And the idea of if you're going to eat an animal, that you have to use the entire animal, the whole animal, and how that's actually, a really respected tradition.
This film was tough for that reason. I mean, it was a really hard, this is a really hard situation. So when you do music, you want to carry the story through. Mm-hmm. But, that aspect of, I guess, using music to carry a story about food as culture. And mm-hmm. I remember when you gave the first cue, let's listen right now to to your theme for a moment. When you presented that to me, I remember thinking, this is not a direction I was thinking for the film. In my mind, this was a much more serious film. I hope, listeners, this sheds a little light on when you watch, when you watch a show on Netflix, or you watch, Vikings on History Channel or something like that. The music is so integral to how it goes. And as a director, I was presented with this particular theme, and it changed the entire tone of the film. I thought, I have this really serious movie, how important it is. And then Alex came through with this very light, fun, almost fairy tale-esque type of a journey, a travel situation. And so when you sit down, I'm hoping you had a glass of wine when you did this, but when you sit down and you start thinking of the theme of a piece of music, what are the tools you have around you? Is it just you with your eyes closed? Do you listen to other music? What do you do? Because it's a process. I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with how somebody composes music.
Sure. And I think that answer is very particular to the individual that is composing music. I also think that the few processes that you alluded to there kind of point the creative output in different directions. So something I'm very conscious of is which tool to use to write music. Where do I want the music to be? So, for example, writing at the piano, improvising at the piano, generating ideas and recording audio of those sessions and then going through the audio to find the ideas is one place to start. Another is singing and vocalizing and kind of that direct channel of what you're hearing in your inner ear or in your mind through your voice instead of an instrument yields a different result. A third way could be starting with pencil and paper and a more kind of traditional sense where you're forcing yourself to very kind of slowly craft the music as opposed to more spontaneously improvising it. And so basically all of those methods can be used at any given point. To your point of the theme here, I think that I came up with that after I first watched the cut that you sent me. A few things immediately affected that music in terms of the cinematic language that you and your team used. Firstly, I mean, the idea of the fairy tale, I think, is an apt one. And the idea that this film is framed with a book and the opening of a book and chapter one and sort of this concept of finding, you know, some dusty, huge encyclopedia of craft and secrets that have been passed down over the years, and you crack that open and go into it. So I think to some extent, the idea of fairy tale, of magic, of something, you know, special and not mysterious, but, you know, something that's been in the world for a while, and now you're getting to look at it, I think is pretty exciting. The second part of it is, so with this music, I didn't immediately start in so these days composers use computers to make their scores, and something called a DAW, which is a software where you can record all the music at the same time. And a lot of times you write a piece of music directly into that program. But for this, I think an important thing, and maybe we can talk about this later, but was the idea of real musicianship and real performers and how that might be analogous to the materials we're seeing on screen idea of tradition. And so in that sense, I wrote this first cue pretty traditionally with pencil and paper, and then producing it with other elements with, you know, our modern technology. But another thing I thought I would just mention is I was really inspired by the cinematography and particularly how colorful the film is. And I'm looking at it even before it was colored and enhanced. I'm watching a pretty low resolution version of it. And even then I was struck by literally the colors, the reds, the greens, the brightness of it, but also just the motion that you use, the going out of this cave, the voiceover. And to me, there was a really kinetic energy to that first scene. So I would call that first cue definitely serious, but also what we're talking about is joyous, and it's being passed from generation to generation. And that magic, I think, came through.
Well, it's a funny thing. This may sound like a relatively geeky conversation. And truthfully, as a director, you don't get to have outward conversations that face out in the world like this very often, because I feel like when you make a film, the idea is you have to hide the craft so that the audience feels like it's just an escape. And that's the right thing. But the reason this works with wine, and I want to bring this back because it obviously this is a wine and food podcast, is that I've been extraordinarily fortunate for every one of my films to have a real score. So meaning there were real instruments, you know, there were real violins, there were real, real instruments, which is you can speak, Alex, better than I can, but it's a pretty rare thing. And I've worked my ass off my whole career to have that luxury and pay composers nothing to do it. And so, but the reason I bring this up is from a wine standpoint, if you look at the way wine is made and you look at the things that go into the glass and go into the bottle, there are two ways to look at a movie or a glass of wine. You can look at it as here is this product that I can enjoy, that serves a purpose for me on this occasion. Maybe I'm at dinner, maybe I'm, you know, whatever it is, but it allows you to do that. But there's also a deeper thing. And the people listening to this podcast know that wine is a series of decisions. It is a series of difficult challenges. It's a series of luck. And films are very much the same way. And I think that when you put a score on a movie is when it actually is done. So for those of you who enjoyed The Whole Animal, I can tell you right now, The Whole Animal would be a very different product without Alex's score. Because our temp score, when you temp something, it's just not, it doesn't have a soul. So what the score does is it brings in the soul. It would be kind of like taking a bottle of wine and aging it for, you know, a couple of years and then it's ready to go, or 5 years or whatever. Then it actually has personality and it actually is what it's supposed to be. That's what a score does. So when you compose music, you know, when you are doing the music, do you see the images in your mind, or are you hearing? What is happening? Because it's like a totally different language. What is happening in your mind when you are doing that?
Sure.
Are there pictures?
I don't think it's so visual as much as emotional or conceptual, I suppose. So I would say that in the case of The Whole Animal, in our process on that, this was a really intuitive and sort of an immediate process of composing music. And in that we were going back and forth really quickly and sort of chasing the energy as it was happening, as opposed to, starting writing music and letting it age for 8 years where you come back to it a little bit at a time. This process was probably maybe what, 2 or 3 months of really intensely getting to know the world of the film that you created and then composing music. So, I mean, to some extent, on a romantic conceptual level, I think there are images, you know, you're thinking about the visual language of the film, like I mentioned, and that definitely pointed you somewhere. But on a practical level, at least when I was looking at the film is pretty much an existing thing. It's a piece of cinema and material, and it has a length to it. And there are moments in there that a film composer at least has to acknowledge and hit. And the piece of music needs to get at that big picture, emotional, conceptual level, while also recognizing all the little stops along the way. So one thing I want to say about Jason and about Sam generally is that these films really love music. And when I was watching this film, there are a lot of opportunities built in that I would get really excited about, because suddenly there's no dialogue, there's no voiceover, there's just silence. And those, from a film composer's perspective, especially knowing that Jason and I share a love for classical music and symphonic music and sort of being on the same page in terms of our aesthetic tastes, really exciting to see those opportunities. And so there's a give or take, you know, of what is this scene about? What am I trying to do emotionally? But practically, is someone speaking? That's not my turn then to do something that's a little bit more expressive and quiet. I have to fill that space and build towards something. And then there's an opportunity maybe where the music can do something exciting or be a narrator of sorts, commenting on what we're seeing in, without words. And it's a testament to Jason and Jackson and the editing team that allow for music to go there. In today's cinema, in today's aesthetic sort of landscape, there's often not as many opportunities for a score, particularly what I would call a chamber score, meaning it's comprised of a handful of real individuals, a very kind of small, intimate sounding score to play very melodically, to develop in a way that's more like classical music than anything else. So it's a real treat. Yeah.
Are you a foodie, Alex? Do you like food and wine?
I do love food, and I do drink wine. I was telling Nadine that I prefer a red wine, but I don't know very much about wine, and I'm not a very good cook, but I do enjoy to partake. And I would love to learn more about it, because I think that, you know, cooking is a lot like orchestrating or composing, in the sense that you usually have a like foundation. You know what you're trying to make, you know, whether that is a piece for an orchestra or a piece for a piano. And it's, you know, generally, but in terms of the garnish and the kind of personality that a certain cook or chef puts into the meal, I think really can make or break, you know, the quality of that experience. So I think it's analogous. I would really like to learn about it more, but my friends and family will tell you that I'm not cooking. Nobody wants me to be cooking for them. I cook for myself by necessity. But
do you? So how does when you were coming up with this? I know that there's something when you have to be a creative person. You have to come up with stuff, and you're on deadlines. I think if you are listening to this, you may not know, composers often have the worst deadlines in the entire film industry. They are at the very end, butt up against some release schedule. Do you have like an actual routine in your life, Alex, or when you are working, is it like at 2 a.m, you get an idea, you just got to work off of it? I mean, do you actually have a 9-to-5, like I wake up, I eat breakfast, I go to bed?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty disciplined in terms of a regular routine. Again, I think everybody's different. I'm pretty sure that Quincy Jones said once that if he's not listening to paraphrase, if he's not listening to the muse at night, it will go down the street to visit Henry Mancini, meaning that for him.
I hope these names resonate for people listening. I mean, Henry Mancini is and Quincy Jones, these are legends,
just fantastic composers. But what he's saying there is you have to be ready for. Well, I mean, there's a discipline element to do the work and be ready to compose. And if you miss that boat, someone else will think of it or do it first. A film is a very daunting thing. When looking at The Whole Animal, for example, there's about 45 minutes to an hour of original music to write. And that can be a crippling thought. Where do you start with that? That's so much music. That's a symphony. Another anecdote would be when Stravinsky was living in Los Angeles and went down to MGM, they wanted the best composers to be writing for their pictures. And Igor Stravinsky, fresh off the Firebird, Petrushka, Rite of Spring, the greatest composer in the 20th century, is in Los Angeles. So they want him to score pictures, and they show him a movie and they say, how long do you need to score this? And he says, probably 2 to 3 years. And they laugh and they say, thank you for coming in and have a good day. You know, the reality of film composing is that timelines, like Jason said, are much quicker. So the way that I rationalize that, and I think most people rationalize that, is you have to write 1 or 2 or 3 minutes a day, depending on how much time you have. So with The Whole Animal, that usually meant a cue a day, which is about 60 to 90 seconds. And that includes the writing of the music and then producing the music well enough that you can show it to the filmmaker, being Jason, and say, hey, what do you think about this? And you have to build in time for revisions and for conversations about trying different things. So I like to usually work from about 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. or so. For some reason, nighttime is not a very inspiring time for me.
I wish that was my problem.
Yeah. Are you you're a night owl?
I am a need to be up against the deadline person, and I just can't seem to. If I'm on a beach and somebody says, hey, you know, relax and take your time, I can't do anything. I need somebody to have a gun to my head. And to be honest with you, I think a lot of people who are directors have that. Now, can we geek out for a minute? Because I want to talk about, all I ever try to do on this podcast is transition everything to movies. And I get people yelling at me like, hey, why aren't you talking about, some grape? But I want to talk about what are, in your opinion, if I'm going to put you up against the wall and say, these are 5 of the absolute best film scores that you should actually acknowledge in a movie. I definitely have my answers, but I want to know, what are your favorite? You guys understand this person, Alex, you're listening to, this guy is going to win Oscars. He is a very important person. You're catching him at an early stage here. And I'd like to take all the credit, because The Whole Animal is going to be the reason. Okay. So let's talk about movies and scores. So what movies in your mind are the films that are the ones you say they pulled this off? These are the greatest scores that I can name off the top of my head. Maybe you and I can go back and forth on this.
I would love that. Yeah. I think it's a difficult question, in the sense that I think that different people value score differently, right?
Well, and I'm asking you.
This is for me. Yeah. So
this is for me.
I think that what John Williams and Steven Spielberg did on E.T. and then to some extent, well, to a great extent, Close Encounters of the Third Kind as well, but very different scores. But just to start with E.T., is just such an exceptional synthesis of composition, of musical composition, that is so intimately tied to film. And when I think of what inspired me to compose film music, I mean, the last 15 minutes or so of E.T. from Elliot and E.T. taking off the bike, and then the whole sequence going through saying goodbye, just the emotional scope of that and the symphonic, the musical integrity of that and how it works with the movie is, to me, the, you know, kind of the pinnacle of what to strive for. And I think that's a remarkable combination of a composer who is just a master craftsman and just gifted talent, and a filmmaker who loves the music they write. And that there's just the stars really align in that particular project and collaboration. But
I would say that, I'm a huge fan. I would say that if you were going to take a list of geniuses and you're going to just put it across any field, I mean, John Williams deserves to sit in the company of, you know, some of the great creators and inventors and, you know, anything from history. I mean, this is a person who is a monolith. I mean, just his work with the Boston Pops. I mean, this is the kind of stuff, this is all I want to talk about, honestly. You know, we do a lot of these podcasts and sometimes we do one for us, and this is kind of that situation. But you know, when I also think about a score, and I want everybody listening to think, if you can think of a movie, and I think Jaws would be the first one that comes to people's minds, where like a score is you can't separate the movie from the music. But there's also these movies where a piece of music is so memorable and you don't know the score, but you know the one piece. I mean, an example I would give would be like The Natural, when he hits the ball and the lights explode. You know, I think that particular piece would be like a piece where you go, that's swell, and I remember that scene, and without the music, that wouldn't be what it is. And but then there are complete scores. And I would, you know, Taxi Driver with Bernard Herrmann. And like those, that's a score that you look at it and it's this classy, incredible piece of music, or an entire piece of music that matches the gritty grossness of New York and this horrible. And so I would say that it's one of these conversations where you have to think deeper than just, do I remember the music? You know, does it make sense? What else you got? We can talk about Spielberg and John Williams all day, but what else do you have music wise?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we'll get off that collaboration. Close Encounters, to me, is such a fantastic example of because that's so different than how John Williams usually writes, in the sense that he's a melodist, and that score to me is so, it's the opposite of a Wagnerian leitmotivic kind of thing that you think about with Star Wars in the same year that he's writing, that this is a developmental score, that over the course of it, you have da 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 da. And that's a diegetic piece of material that he wrote that the aliens are using to speak.
Diegetic means music you hear on screen see on screen. Like if somebody plays a flute or something, you see the flute.
Well, and that music then becoming part of the score, and the score becoming this sort of modernist, frightening vehicle that slowly becomes this very tonal, warm, expressive thing. But to mention someone else, at least with The Whole Animal, I love, and my dad loves, and so I grew up listening to a lot of Cinema Paradiso and Ennio Morricone. And I think with this film, especially, I mean, the use of accordion and just melodies and this beautiful photography that you captured of these landscapes in Italy and Argentina. I mean, it just was such a fun opportunity to listen to that, to The Mission. I'm not so educated or articulate in the marriage of those scores to picture, but I know at least with Cinema Paradiso, the idea of celebrating cinema and the melodic writing in that film is sort of ingrained into my DNA to some extent. So I'm sure eagle-eared listeners will hear a Morricone reference or two in The Whole Animal, a shameless homage. But
I have threatened many times to do a full-blown spaghetti Western podcast that knows no end for me. I mean, it's my it's just to say it's something that I am very passionate about, and Marconi would be, and Bruno Nicolai and all these composers that are just absolute geniuses would be impossible to not be a constant talk about. Alex, do you have a single favorite film score as we wrap this up? Something that is your absolute favorite film score, and I'd love to know what it is.
This might be a cop out, but I don't think I do, in the sense that
it'd be like asking me what my favorite movie is. I know it's
And I think what I would say is that the joy to me of film music is getting to collaborate with different creatives and to be a chameleon of sorts. So I certainly have favorite film scores in what they do, but the need of every project is so completely different that, I'll say one more, a favorite film score of mine, which again, this is dodging your question a little, but
yeah. Why are you dodging? You got to have an answer here.
As a young person and as a current individual, I love Michael Giacchino's work on Ratatouille and definitely looked to that film in prepping for this film. And the idea
promise you people listening to this love Ratatouille. They it's have sensational. To. It's a great film. What a great call.
Yeah. A beautiful, again, marriage of music and picture and celebrating cooking and food with such a vibrant music. I would say the Pixar scores, you know, from Thomas Newman's work on Finding Nemo and WALL-E to Giacchino again on Up, this and The Incredibles, you know, that golden age of Pixar was very formative. But it's hard to say, you know, could you name a favorite score of all time or a favorite film of all time?
Yeah, because I'm I could, because I will do it because you put me up against the wall. But I mean, I also feel like scores are like screenplays in a strange way, in that they can be read separate. They can be listened to separate. And I would say a lot of what I listen to on my own for pleasure happens to be movie scores. But I would also say that I can't listen to them without seeing or feeling the movie as I do it. And if there was no score, like, you know, there are certain classical pieces, you know, Carl Orff has done and things where all I do is see pictures. I see and hear. And like, I think that's a score for a movie that just hasn't been done. And so I would, my very strange answer, and I don't mean to be esoteric here, but I think the score for The Third Man, I don't know if you've ever seen that film. There's an instrument called a zither. And it's a Orson Welles film, Joseph Cotten movie. I'd put it as the greatest film noir film ever made. I think it is one of, it could be the best film ever made. I think there's an argument, at least. And there's an amazing story that the director, an Englishman, a director who was in post-war Vienna, saw a person playing this instrument called a zither, and he became infatuated with it and asked him to score the film. And I think it's one of the greatest marriages of music. I think if you're going to talk about soundtracks that function as score, I don't think anybody does it better than The Graduate or some of the stuff Tarantino has done. And so that's tricky. Favorite movie? Yeah, my favorite movie ever made is a film called Ron. It was a film Akira Kurosawa did. It's a samurai movie based on King Lear. And I think it's, I could watch it 1,000 times in a row. It is one of the most badass fucking movies that's ever happened. And it's perfect. It's a perfect film, but it's also a movie that I don't know if you or anyone else will love, but I think you'll acknowledge that it is immaculate. It's kind of an immaculate conception. So
I'll watch it tonight.
Those are my,
that's awesome.
Ron. Yeah. Well, yeah, I'll that's great. That'll, if you watch Ron tonight, I'll be so happy right now.
I'll send you a text
I'll send you a bottle. I'll send you a bottle of wine to drink. But I think that the reason I think it's very cool to have these conversations is to talk about, we get into minutia quite a bit on this pod. We talk about process. We talk about decisions. We talk about why certain things happen. And I think this is really important to understand, that when you see a film, whether it's The Whole Animal or a Spielberg film or whatever else, that is the feeling of the movie. You know, you may not hear words, but you feel, and it is so important. And I would say that it's similar to the fact that, you know, this is going to be a bad analogy, but it's one that I would totally say, is that it's like the buzz when you drink alcohol. You know, you feel it and it gives you a feeling, and it's separate from the taste, it's separate from the language. It is this thing that is intangible, and a lot of it has to do with manipulating you. And Alex, you are one of the great manipulators, and I can't wait to hopefully work with you again. So,
so generous of you. Thank you for speaking to me today. It's an honor to be a part of this film.
You're too nice a guy. I hope everybody enjoyed the whole animal, and maybe if you watch it again, you will pay closer attention to the music, which has real instruments and a lot of love went into it. Alex, thanks for being on the podcast. It means a lot, bud.
Thanks, Jason.
I want to thank everybody for listening. It really means a lot. If you love this podcast, please do not forget to give it a great review wherever you listen to podcasts, whether that's Apple or Spotify or somewhere else. Leave us a good review. It means a lot. And do not forget, there's only a limited amount of codes. If you use 50OFF, 50OFF, you can get 50% off SOM TV for an entire year. That's $25, everyone. SOMTV.com, 50OFF. I want to thank our podcast producer, John Adams, who produced this episode. And I want to thank my mom, who stayed listening all the way to the end. Everybody be safe, eat something good, eat something healthy, and have a good glass of wine. Talk soon.